Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, Therapist Kelly.
Kelly, I feel like tremendous abandonment issues today. You're not here with me.
You're alone.
I'm alone in this studio with this ominous looking technology thing that I have to learn to do and not ask our poor engineer
awesome.
Every time.
So funny. No, you're doing great. And I know I miss you too. Thank you for holding down the fort.
Well, you've done it many times for me, my dear, so I'm happy to do it. So how are you?
So things are okay. I mean, sadly, I had a friend's father die, so I was paying my respects and supporting her, so that's why I couldn't be in studio today. But, on a brighter note, you know, the week was really nice. I took my kids to, like, California Adventure. I'm trying to remember, like, everything's, like, mushing together, but... Yeah, on 4th of July, we went swimming, and they had a great time. These kids are not deprived.
Never. Not with you. It's their mom or their dad, David.
Right.
Do you see fireworks from your area?
You know what's so strange? They didn't do fireworks this year near us. I don't know why. So they actually were so exhausted from the day that we didn't end up doing fireworks, if you can believe it. So they didn't see it. So, and it was fine with me. I was tired too.
Oh, I know. You're usually in bed by 8 o'clock or something like that.
Exactly. I mean, come on. That's normal for me.
You can't wait for dark in the summer. Jeez. well, we are really lucky where I live.
You know?
We can just walk right outside of our house, just walk right down the block, just stand there and watch a big show. So don't have to go anywhere. Don't have to fight crowds.
Really?
Yeah. So it was really awesome. We spent the day in Santa Barbara, then went to a friend's barbecue, got home, hunkered down, and then walked outside at around 9:10 and saw 20 minutes of fireworks. It was great.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anywho, well, I'm glad that you're healthy and I'm sorry about your loss. And, you know, thanks for coming on the show anyway, even though, you could have easily just gone home and not talked to me.
Okay.
I'm not going to rub it in anymore. I'm just kidding.
Well, no, I couldn't miss today's guest. I'm so excited.
I know that you're obsessed with him, but just hold
off.
He's
one of my favorite.
1 second. You have to hold off. We just have to do a little bit of accolades for last week's guest, who we had in studio, who's actually a dear friend of mine, Wendy Kawasaki, who is First Light Ayurveda. And she talked to us about Vedic astrology and telling us the differences between Vedic and Western astrology. And just super cool. You know, she just has an amazing aura about her. And just she was so much fun.
I loved her energy. Like, I really did. She was so calm and collect, and I thought it was fascinating her background because she was an ER nurse and then kind of transitioning into this, you know, intuitive medicine world. So it was a great show. If you missed that, fascinating.
And for sure, if you missed that, I mean, she is First Light. I mean, she definitely radiates light. So First Light Ayurveda, Wendy Kawasaki, was awesome. And now, without further ado, because I know this is one of our favorite guests of all time, which is quite the statement considering we have been on now for almost 4 years. So that's out of, almost 200 guests? So this is awesome.
Yes,
it's Dr. Robert Leahy, who has a bachelor's, a master's, a PhD, Yale University, has authored and edited 26 books on cognitive therapy, 26, wow, and psychological processes, and is the past president of the Association for Behavioral and Cognitive Therapy, past president of the International Association for Cognitive Psychotherapy, and past president of the Academy of Cognitive Therapy, also a clinical professor of psychology and psychiatry at Weill Cornell Medical School. His books have been translated into 20 languages. He's been featured in print and televised media worldwide and is a frequent keynote speaker and workshop leader in conferences throughout the world. Dr. Leahy is the honorary lifetime president, New York City Cognitive Behavioral Therapy Association, and distinguished founding fellow, diplomat, and Academy of Cognitive Therapy. Welcome to our show today.
Well,
and we are
you.
Going to talk about your book today, The Jealousy Cure, Learn to Trust, Overcome Possessiveness, and Save Your Relationship. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for the wonderful introduction. I feel exhausted listening to it.
That's a hell of a lot of credentials and accomplishments. Good for you.
I should quit while I'm ahead here.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that your as good as your last intro? Your as good as your last bio?
Let's hope so. I don't know.
No, you are amazing. And we already know that because we had you on for your book, The Worry Cure. Now, are most of your books have something about the cure in them?
Well, I write books for clinicians, you know, for therapists, and I write books for the general public. So The Jealousy Cure, which is my newest book, is something that I thought there's so many people who struggle with jealousy, either their own jealousy or their partner's jealousy. So I thought that would be an interesting and important topic to address. I hope it helps people.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great topic. I'm really curious, before we dive into the contents of the book, which is so exciting to do, the cover of the book intrigues me. I'm wondering, so there's a lot of red, there's black, there's a little black bird and a little red bird. Was anything inspiring those colors or that design in terms of its relationship to jealousy?
Well, I think that the publisher's graphic designer wanted to get at the idea that that jealousy in an intimate relationship is about potential lovebirds who may be in conflict, the red and the black bird. So I'm not sure what goes on in the minds of a graphic artist, but I kind of like the cover.
There you go. I love it.
I love it.
It's really simple, but it really speaks loud words, actually.
Yeah.
Let's get right into what are the most common misunderstandings of the two words jealousy versus envy. Can you tell us the difference between those?
Yeah, so this is something I think is a very common confusion, that jealousy is always about three people. So in terms of romantic jealousy, that I could be jealous of somebody who's showing an interest in my wife, or my wife is showing an interest in them. So that would be about three people. Envy is more about people getting ahead of me in a status hierarchy. So, you know, somebody who makes more money or who's more popular or who has, you know, greater reputation, whatever it is. So envy is more about status, and jealousy is more about three people, kind of a threat to the attachment. Now, we could also, I mean, people tend to get these two things confused, but technically that would be the difference. We can be envious of people we're jealous of. We can be envious that this other man or woman who my partner finds appealing has qualities that I wish I had. So that would be the envy about their qualities. But the jealousy would be a threat to the relationship. And we can be jealous about our relationships with friends, with colleagues at work, family members, our brothers and sisters. So even animals show jealousy, which is intriguing. And we have, it's a pretty common, very powerful emotion. Actually, the word jealous comes from the Greek word zeal, zeal being a passionate emotion. So it kind of captures that feeling of intensity that people have. It's a hot emotion.
And jealousy can also be with a, sorry, Kelly, just one second, you go right after, can be about another event also, like if somebody's spending too much time at work, or they have a new career that they're very excited about, that can also inspire jealousy. So it's not always just people.
Yeah, so you can be jealous of your partner's iPad.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
You're spending more time on the iPad than with me.
I'm so curious as far as women and men, and if there's a difference in who's more jealous, if there's been studies showing that.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting question, that if you ask men, they'll say that women are more jealous. But the research is actually quite mixed. Overall, that men and women are about equally jealous, but women tend to be more jealous about sexual infidelity that women tend to be more jealous about emotional infidelity, and men tend to be more jealous about sexual infidelity. So men may be more jealous if their partner, their wife or girlfriend, whatever, is sexually intimate with somebody else, or sexually attracted, or flirtatious, or affectionate, whereas women are more likely to be jealous about the man showing an emotional closeness to a woman, even if he's not sexually intimate with her. So, and this tends to hold up in different cultures, that you find this kind of sexual jealousy more powerful in men than in women. So it's not one more jealous than the other. It's there may be different triggers for the jealousy.
Intuitively, though, that really makes sense when we go with the stereotypes that women are more craving and longing for nurturance and emotional connectedness. And, you know, men stereotypically, they want sex. So if their partner is not having sex with someone else, they feel like a failure. And if a woman is not drawing her man in to be the one and only that he shares his emotions with, she's going to feel totally cheated. Right? That makes sense.
Right.
Right.
Are we more likely to be jealous if we're looking at somebody who we envy? In other words, like a coworker of your husband's who you envy, that you're going to be more likely to have jealous feelings?
Yeah. I think you're right. What we know is that we tend to be jealous about the other person having qualities that we think are going to make them a better competitor. So I don't mean to be sexist, I think this could go either way, but you know, women, with the research tends to show that women tend to be more jealous about a woman who may be younger and or who may be perceived as more physically attractive, whereas men may be more jealous of a man who seems to have more power or wealth. Those tend to be somewhat different, but you know, the overlap between men and women is very strong as well. It's not like we're two different species. I think it's interesting if you think about why would men be more threatened by sexual infidelity? One theory that's been advanced from an evolutionary point of view is that the woman always knows that the baby that she gives birth to is hers. It's always going to be mommy's baby. But it's unclear whether it's going to be daddy's baby. So some evolutionary psychologists would say mommy's baby, daddy's maybe.
Ah, I love it.
You know? So, you know, the man never knows, is that really my baby? So what we know with humans and even with animals, even with insects, there's a strategy called mate guarding, which sounds awful, but it's that they'll fight off and guard the female, especially during times when she's more likely to conceive during estrus. So you have this kind of competitive thing where the males are trying to protect, make sure that he's the one who's impregnated her. So, I mean, in some cultures, they prevent the female from interacting with other males outside of the company of a guardian. So it's like trying to control her or keep her from showing any kind of sexual, even showing her face or bare skin in some cultures is viewed as inappropriate.
Sure. Oh, also, back to your statement about, you know, men and women and somewhat of their qualitative difference in their jealousy, that also sounds like it would have a connection to what somebody's self-worth is based on, right? I mean, if a woman is raised to believe that her value is her attractiveness and, you know, her vivaciousness, then that's going to be naturally what she's going to project onto someone else, that's going to be more important.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And so there's a sense in which if you think that the only thing that's going to keep your partner is your looks or your money, then that might be more threatening. But, you know, generally, if you look at what leads people to get divorced, it tends to be the way they relate to each other, that they tend to, you know, people who are, you know, contemptuous of their partner or not rewarding or argumentative or, you know, don't solve problems with them, you know, those are people who are more likely to get divorced. Really, I mean, there are a lot of very attractive movie actors and actresses who get divorced, but they may not be relating to each other in a humane and compassionate way.
I was just having that conversation with.
Yeah.
I was just having that conversation with one of my clients yesterday. I know it's amazing.
In jealousy, in terms of the process of the relationship, so when you're first dating, you know, the first few dates or whatever it is, you don't have as much jealousy because you don't have much invested. You know, it's kind of like, well, let's see what happens. I hardly know this person. I don't really have much invested. You have a lot of uncertainty, but you have no investment. As the relationship progresses and you begin getting emotionally invested more over the course of a few months, but you still have a lot of uncertainty, you don't know where it's going to go, you're more likely to have jealousy. If you've been married for 30 years, you're less likely to have jealousy because you kind of know what you have and you know what you don't have. And even though you have a lot invested, you reduce the uncertainty. So uncertainty is kind of like something that changes in the course of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not sure about your partner's commitment and how deeply involved they are with you, you're more likely to be jealous. I'm not saying that you should never be jealous, by the way. I think jealousy is a normal emotion. It's a universal emotion.
Right. It's really
makes sense.
It's really what you do with it.
It is normal.
For sure.
Right. So a lot of people are told, oh, the reason you're jealous is that you're insecure and you have low self-esteem. My observation is that, I mean, that could be true in some cases, but it could also be the case you're jealous because you have high self-esteem, that you feel, I'm not going to allow my partner to do that. That's not okay with me for them to, you know, go out and have dinner with their, you know, ex-boyfriend or girlfriend or, you know, act in ways that may feel uncomfortable to me or hide things from me. So sometimes jealousy can be a statement of assertion that, you know, I'm not going to allow that to happen.
Now, Kelly,
The relationship between self-esteem and jealousy is not that clear. The research is very mixed on that. But some studies show, somewhat related to lower self-esteem. Other studies, there's no relationship to self-esteem. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, I was just going to ask, Kelly, historically, have you been you seem like a non-jealous person. I was historically a very jealous person until I recognized where I have control and where I don't. And I just don't have control over someone else's behavior. So in line with Dr. Leahy's The Worry Cure, why worry about something that hasn't happened yet?
Right.
But that took more self-confidence and just recognizing that. How about you?
What fascinates me, and I'll answer your question, but I'm so curious with Dr. Leahy, is compersion, which is like the opposite of jealousy, where you actually like derive joy from seeing your partner happy. And so I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about that too, because I'm amazed with when partners can kind of have that. It's like they're okay with their partner flirting with somebody else because it knows, okay, well, it makes them happy.
Right. I haven't seen a hell of a lot of that. one way of looking at it is that, let's say you're at a party and your partner, that somebody seems obviously flirtatious with your partner, you can reframe that as, well, you must be with an attractive person. So good for you, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So I think a certain amount of, let's say, non-intrusive flirting is normal. I think that people like being charming or like being outgoing with other people. And that doesn't have to threaten the relationship. It's sort of how you interpret it. You know, it's kind of like if you interpret it as, well, my partner is smiling a lot, and therefore they don't find me interesting anymore, and they're going to leave me, obviously that's going to be upsetting. On the other hand, if you normalize it, you say, well, the reason I'm with them is that they're charming and they smile a lot and they're friendly, and if I like them, a lot of other people are going to like them. So, I think for a lot of people that they say, oh, I feel jealous and I've got to get rid of that feeling or I can't stand that feeling, I think that that's not very adaptive, because I think like all the emotions that we have evolved because they've conferred some advantage to our ancestors. Jealousy protected us from not knowing the paternity of the offspring. Jealousy is also the limited resources. So if somebody else is getting all the advantages, we're going to get fewer advantages. So jealousy is sort of like a protective strategy. And so those thoughts and feelings are going to happen. And the metaphor I use is, just imagine if you thought about your relationship with your partner as a large room, you know, filled with books and objects and, you know, tchotchkes and things that remind pictures and all this sort of thing. And everything in the room is an emotion or an experience or a memory. We call that the relationship room. And in this relationship room, jealousy is one collection of emotions or experiences that you're going to have. If you think about, okay, I'll make room for the jealousy. So if I go to a party and if my partner is, you know, friendly with somebody else or somebody's friendly with her or with him, I just don't think, okay, that's sort of part of the relationship. It's just like feeling frustrated or annoyed with your partner is something that's normal. I mean, relationships are not about black and white thinking where everything is wonderful and perfect. They're about a lot of complexity and conflict and disappointments at times. And so jealousy may be just simply something that comes with the territory. In fact, if your partner said to you, you know, I really value you, but if you want to go out and have sex with anybody else, that's fine with me. I think most people would wonder, does my partner really love me?
Mm-hmm, right.
Does my partner really have any commitment, or is my partner actually building a case that they can cheat on me? So in some cases, people actually test out their partner to see if they are jealous. So if you really, you know, if you really valued me, are you going to get jealous if I flirt with this other person? And in fact, one study that they did that David Buss, who's an evolutionary psychologist, cites in his work, that people who experienced jealousy in the early part of the relationship were far more likely to stay together later. And it's interesting because if you have a shallow, superficial relationship, you're less likely to be jealous. If you think this really matters to me, you're probably more likely to be open to jealousy.
Because I've always been suspect of people who say that they never get jealous. It's like, really? Mm-hmm. Are you human? Or mm-hmm. Right. Do you really not care about this person? Because it's not normal to not have those
right.
feelings, at
yeah.
least floating
yeah.
now and again.
Yeah.
I love in your book how you have this...
You can find jealousy in 10-month-old infants.
For sure. Absolutely. I just saw it in my cat this morning, too. Yeah.
And you find it with cats and dogs.
For
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You have a chapter
Anywhere.
In your book that says jealous strategies that drive your partner away. I'd love if you could speak to one or two or three
yeah.
of those. That would be
right,
really amazing.
Right. Yeah. So there's a difference between, you know, the kind of jealous feelings that you have, like, you know, feeling angry and anxious, and the behavior that you have. So you can have a feeling of jealousy, but it's probably the behavior that gets you into trouble. So, you know, things that you might do to, you might interrogate your partner, you know, tell me everything. Or you might check their text messages or emails or Facebook page or, you know, whatever, kind of stalk them on the social media. Or you might follow them. or you might threaten them, or you might start pouting or withholding. I mean, these are all perfectly normal emotions, I think. But the problem with that is that jealousy is about your feeling that the closeness of your relationship is threatened. If you start using these strategies, it's going to threaten the closeness even more. So you have this real dilemma when you're jealous that you want to know what's going on. You want to make sure your partner doesn't stray. But if you use these strategies, you may actually undermine the very thing you're trying to protect.
So, okay, so what do you do in that case? I mean,
I think it's a good question. And I think the first thing I do, you know, with people I try to counsel on their jealousy is I try to normalize jealousy. You know, I had one patient who came in and said, oh, I think I'm losing it because I got so jealous that my boyfriend had dinner with his ex-girlfriend and I felt jealous. And he thinks I've become that crazy, insecure girlfriend. I said, really, how do your other girlfriends feel when you tell them about the boyfriend with the ex-girlfriend? Well, they think he's a jerk. Well, okay. I'm not saying he's a jerk, but what you're saying is that your girlfriends feel the same thing that you feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Because things matter to you. So one is, I think, normalizing jealousy, that this is something that's universal. Second, that doesn't mean every single person in the world feels that way, but it's everywhere, every culture. And second, that your jealousy is related to your values of commitment and monogamy. So that may be an extremely important thing to keep in mind. You're jealous because things matter. The third thing is to validate that the jealousy is a difficult emotion because you both are angry and you in a way, you love the person at the same time. And this is a very difficult thing for us to kind of realize, that we can love and hate the same person at any given moment. So recognizing that part of a meaningful emotional relationship is a combination of conflicting emotions. The other thing is that whatever emotion you have at the present moment will probably not last that long unless you get hijacked by it. Like you can go to a party, have a moment of jealousy, feel really intense, go home, and maybe the jealousy is evaporated. So think about the experiences in the past that you had jealousy about, maybe last year or 5 years ago or last month. It may very well be at the present moment without even thinking about it. So what we have to think about is that these emotions don't last forever. The other thing I suggest is that recognize you could have a jealous feeling, but you don't have to act on it. This is, I think, a very important thing, that you can feel really intense, but you don't have to act intensely. Think about the consequences of interrogating or accusing or threatening. That's going to get you into worse problems. I think another thing is that I think in every relationship, you have to kind of negotiate what the agreement is about, what you feel okay about. Because a lot of stuff people think, oh, I take it for granted, or they knew that would bother me. People are not that good at reading minds. But you may have to have some guidelines. So I feel really uncomfortable about your seeing this ex-girlfriend or about your, doing this, that, or the other. So would you be willing to do X, Y, or Z? Which means that, a lot of people think if they have a committed relationship, if they're married, they still should be able to do whatever they want to do. But that's not what a committed relationship is. It's kind of like, it's like you don't have a job where you're working for, Google or whatever, and you go to work and you say, well, I'm going to do whatever I want to do. There's no job like that. There's no committed relationship where you just do whatever the hell you want to do at any time. I think to some extent we sometimes may overvalue our sense of spontaneity and freedom. which I think relationships of all kinds, friendships, intimate relationships, work relationships, being a parent, whatever, being a sibling, involve balancing your individuality with your connection and your commitment to other people. People may not view it the same way as I do, but I would suggest that what I've just described may be a more adaptive way of getting through life.
I love it too. It's so true. Yeah, because it is really hard to balance your independence and then your connection and your commitment. Yeah.
Right. It's like I've seen people who think that they should be able to say or do whatever they feel at any time, and then they don't understand why their partner doesn't trust them. So trust is not something that just you're entitled to because you exist. Trust is something that comes when you're trustworthy.
Of course.
And I think that's something that we tend, and I think in our society for so long, especially the last 30, 40 years, we so overvalued our freedom to do whatever we want to do, and thinking that there's not going to be a cost to that. That it's so I see these people who think, well, I can cheat and I can have something on the side and all that. And what they do is they make their lives much more complicated. And then things blow up, they get caught, and then they think, oh my God, I can't believe how stupid I was. But the reality is that life is about trade-offs. And if you engage in certain behavior, you have to think about what the risk is going to be and how it's going to make other people feel. You're not living in a world where there are not other people whose lives you don't touch.
Sure.
I think in some ways, if you think, well, maybe one of my goals is to make life simple and to have a guideline about how I act. So the jealousy thing is about not only the person who's feeling jealous, but the person mm-hmm. who is the target of the jealousy and how they negotiate and understand. Like some people may think, if I'm dating somebody and I become sexually intimate, now we have an understanding that we're completely monogamous.
Right.
But sexual intimacy doesn't establish a contract.
For
it
sure.
It simply says, yeah, just had sex. It may be
right.
that you both agree on monogamy, but it may not be.
I can't tell you how many times I've encountered that in my practice with couples, and they say, well, I thought that we were monogamous at that time, but did you speak about it? What was that assumption based on?
Right.
You know, your operating principles might be very different. And to speak to what you were saying a few minutes ago also, is that this idea that people... stereotypically, especially men, would say, well, I'm getting married, so I'm losing my freedom, so I have to have this crazy bachelor party. It's like, wait a second, why not, if you're getting married, why are you not looking at all the beautiful things that are going to go into your cup as a result of that?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. So freedom, for I think for somebody who has a more realistic view of what relationships with, freedom has to be balanced with responsibility. It can't just simply be I'm a 2-year-old and I do whatever I want.
Right.
It has to be something where, okay, yes, I'd like to be able to do this, but this relationship matters to me, so I'm willing to make a compromise. And I think people often overvalue the idea that this other option that I pursue is going to make me happy. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side. But it also may be maybe get caught in barbed wire, an existential barbed wire. As you go, the grass that's greener on the other side.
It's so true. What also fascinates me, and I'm wondering if you could speak to this, is how jealousy can also be like a turn on. You know, like I know some people who might be interested in like, oh, you know, okay, so my wife's been flirting and they're angry, but yet they're sort of turned on at the same time. I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to that.
So that does happen with some people. And I think for some people, it's kind of like I'm feeling arousal, which might be anxiety and anger. But arousal is what you label it. I mean, if you have physiological arousal, your heart's beating rapidly and your fists are clenched, you can interpret it as anxiety, anger, or sexual desire. You know, so arousal is a physiological readiness to do something. And what you do, you could either attack the person or you could have sex with them.
Right.
That makes sense.
And hopefully not do both at the same time.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
I love that.
It also can be that I want to win the competition. So I'm going to have sex with them. I'm going to nail it down. You know,
sure.
So, yeah, that could be
my territory. Kind of, yeah.
Let's speak a little bit. Let's speak.
And we're all animals, and I mean that in a good way. Because I like animals.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Let's speak a little bit about what to do if you encounter your partner having irrational jealousy. In other words, they're imagining something that really isn't there because of maybe past experiences, and you just know that you're really clean, and you don't want to be accused of these things. But at the same time, it's not helpful to just tell your partner she's an idiot or he's an idiot or you're crazy.
Right. So, the worst thing to tell your partner, you must have low self-esteem or you're neurotic.
Well,
that only makes it worse because that makes you feel even more insecure.
It's very
difficult to look at your partner, your partner's angry at you. It's very difficult to look at them with loving kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Because our first response is to defend, our second response is a counterattack.
Sure.
But to look at your partner, somebody you love, and that person is going through turmoil about they value you and they feel afraid. So you can either be a friend or you can be an opponent. It's very difficult because, you know, you don't want to show loving kindness when you're being attacked. But, you know, loving kindness, it's very hard to stay angry at somebody who's kind to you. I mean, you know this as a therapist that...
Sure.
If a patient is angry at you, if you respond with defensiveness, they'll probably never come back, but they'll certainly get more angry during the session. But if you respond with kindness and validation and compassion, just as you would think about, you know, it seems like it's such a difficult and hard thing. I'm so sorry that you're feeling so incredibly upset about this, and I wish you felt different, but I know that these things are real to you, and I just really want you to know that I'm on your side, and even though you're angry at me, I still love you and care about you. But it's like a mother or father picking up a child that's upset, you know, and telling them, you know, I'm here for you, even though you're upset with me. That doesn't mean to invalidate the other person's anger or jealousy, but just simply to be a compassionate person at the moment. Very hard for us to do it. We think we have to stand our moral high ground. I'm innocent. It really comes down to attachment. It comes down to, as a mother or father, you know, what's going to make your child feel secure and loved at the present moment.
Okay, and that makes sense if it's like irrational jealousy, like you were saying, Deborah, like just sort of, you know.
Yeah.
But what if there had been infidelity, and then the partner cannot, you know, just can't trust the person again?
This is a very, very significant issue. So infidelity occurs in a lot of relationships, and men are more likely to be unfaithful than women are, but men are more likely to divorce their wives because of their wives' infidelity, even though men are more likely to be unfaithful. So, but the issue of infidelity, to some extent, involves what does it mean to the couple. I've seen couples where one partner has been unfaithful, it's been revealed or discovered, whatever, and they've been able to rebuild the relationship. So that doesn't always happen, and it doesn't always need to happen. But sometimes it can happen. And one way of looking at it, and there are many ways of looking at it, it's not just one, but one way of looking at it is that the infidelity may have occurred because of some breakdown in the relationship, that maybe they weren't having sex, maybe they weren't communicating, maybe they weren't doing things together. So you can think about infidelity if you still think that, well, maybe I wish I could rebuild this relationship, but how can I trust the person? So the therapy then would be, I think, you know, and this is my experience in helping couples, is to actually normalize the anger and the feelings of distrust, and they're going to be there for a while. You can still work on the relationship even if you hate your partner at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can still act like decent human beings even if you're angry. You can still do things together even if you're distrustful. Some people think, well, I've got to get all those feelings right before I start working on the relationship.
Right.
It's like somebody who has pneumonia, like you've got to get over the fever before you can work on the pneumonia. No, you work on it. And so building trust may be, what does it mean to the person? Does it mean that my partner no longer finds me attractive, or that my partner will always act out in the future? Or could it be used as a turning point, that let's look at how the relationship broke down and let's try to rebuild the relationship so it's better in the future than it was before it broke down? It's like if your car breaks down, you don't say, well, just throw it to the junkyard and I'll go out and get a new car, you know? But you figure out is what happened and how to fix it. And so if you take a problem-solving strategy, and it's not easy, then you might be able to rebuild it in a way that's better than it was before. I think the other thing is trust is not all or nothing. I think we have a very idealized view of trust. We think, oh, I trust this person completely. I don't trust myself completely. I don't know what I'm going to say tomorrow.
Agreed.
Or 5 minutes from now.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not going to always live up to my standards. So I just intend to think about trust as like people, I understand that a friend of yours is talking behind your back. Everybody talks behind everybody's back. You're talking about this person right now.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like we have these idealized views about our emotions and our relationships that just don't hold up to reality.
So true.
You know, kind of realizing that trust is going to require putting things together until the trust is gradually rebuilt, and it's not going to happen overnight.
It
takes a lot of work.
For sure.
A lot of work.
Here's another scenario that is very common in my experience is, let's say you recognize that your partner is having jealous feelings, at least all behaviors suggest to be so, and you actually compassionately say to your partner, is this causing you some jealousy? Because I'd really like to talk about it if so. And your partner says, I'm not jealous.
Right.
What do you do in that situation?
I think we need to normalize this. We need to think, well, of course you're jealous.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why aren't you jealous?
Sure.
In the 18th century, you were expected to be jealous. In fact, it was a sign of honor that if your partner was flirting with somebody else and you weren't jealous, you were acting in a dishonorable way because you were not defending your honor. In the 19th century, under the Victorians, everybody wanted to have peace and quiet at home. And so you're not supposed to be angry, you're jealous.
Mm.
In the 21st century, people think that jealousy is a sign of being neurotic or possessive or, you know, crazy, as opposed to jealousy is part of human nature. And so people often feel very ashamed of feeling jealous. They feel, oh, I shouldn't feel jealous. What's wrong with me that I'm jealous? You know, but if you're not jealous, maybe it's a question about your commitment or the depth of your feelings. So I think normalizing jealousy, you know, I wouldn't blame you for being jealous, or that was a stupid thing for me to do, and I'm sorry if it made you feel uncomfortable, whatever. But I think normalizing and making room for the jealousy.
Right. On a kind of a separate note, although it's really related, do you know of any research or what your feelings, thoughts, opinions are about this whole wave of polyamory that's sort of entering into the culture in a more mainstream way?
Yeah, I've got to say, I mean, people brought up a polyamory thing, and I guess it's just simply so different from the way I think and feel that. I'll let the polyamory experts deal with that.
Okay. I didn't know if you were, you know.
So my approach is, if you're interested in polyamory, then don't buy my book.
Gotcha.
Right.
I don't want you to buy my book.
Love it. That's awesome. Oh, my gosh.
But it is fascinating because would you say, jealousy, it almost doesn't matter if you're in a polyamorous relationship or in a just a committed monogamous relationship. Isn't jealousy the same? So that's what I'm curious.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on polyamory, but I've had numerous people that I've worked with over the years who had polyamorous relationships, and in many cases it ended up where it was really we often tend to think we're so sophisticated,
right,
that we can handle anything. Oh, I'm such a sophisticated, modern thinking, fashion forward person that I can handle anything. But you know, there's an aspect of human nature that keeps coming back. I mean, we're not just simply, you know, robots. I've seen a number of, and again, I'm not an expert on polyamory. I'm sure that you could have an expert on who, you know, cite all kinds of anecdotes and stuff. But my observation was that for many people, I've had one person who was polyamorous and to the sex parties and then couldn't understand why his female partners didn't trust him.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, we are running out of time. So you got to tell everybody where they can find your book and all that good stuff. We have been talking with Dr. Robert Leahy, and he is the author of the book, The Jealousy Cure. So where can people find it?
Well, you can find it in Barnes & Noble. You can find it on Amazon.com or on the BarnesandNoble.com. It's widely available. And I hope, my feeling is if I write a book and it helps one person, then it's been worth it. You know, because people kill people over jealousy. They kill themselves over jealousy.
Mm, that's true.
And it's something that we really, really need to help people with rather than just marginalize them or label them. That this is part of our being human and part of having a passionate nature.
So true. Absolutely. Beautifully said.
Yeah.
Yes. And where can people find you? Do you have a website that you'd like to give out?
Yeah. So the website is www.cognitivetherapynyc.com. That's cognitivetherapynyc.com. So we're in New York City, the American Institute for Cognitive Therapy. And so check us out there. But hopefully the book will be helpful to somebody out there, help keep people together. The great tragedy of jealousy is people love each other and then the relationship is undermined by their emotions.
Oh, thank you so much. As expected, you were a fantastic guest with so much useful information. We so appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
You're so kind to have me on. I appreciate everything.
Thank you so much.
No, it's a fascinating topic.
It really is so fascinating.
We could go for hours.
It relates to everybody, even the people who deny it, for sure.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you again.
And next week we have Denise Mange and her upcoming book, Healing with Chakras, addressing how our pets reflect our energy patterns impacting their behavior and our relationships. Very exciting. Kelly will have that to look forward to. And I look forward to seeing your beautiful face in studio next week.
Yeah. Thank you so much for holding down the fort. I'll see you next week.
Love you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.